This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, how are we doing this beautiful Thursday morning?
I'm great, Mark. Yeah, good to see you as well, and looking forward to the show today. Great guest, and Hannah Steelman will be here. Outstanding ACC runner, just won the steeplechase. Look forward to talking to her. Monica McNutt will be here, help us with the WNBA draft and the ACC's impact on that. Then Scott Satterfield, Louisville's football coach, will join us in the Power Hour. And Gavin Cross of Virginia Tech Baseball, the ACC Pitcher of the Week, will stop by. In addition, in this first hour, we'll talk to Dan Murphy, who covers things for ESPN about this NIL. And the last couple of days, we've been talking about schools doing branding agreements and things like that, and how fast track are we for the name, image, and likeness. But we start this show with some alumni news.
Yep.
Right?
Headliner. Headliner from last night. Major League Baseball.
You bet.
Another no-no. Mm-hmm. With the second no-no in 5 days in Major League Baseball. And this one's got ties to the ACC. And Elliot Avent and NC State baseball fans will go, that's my boy right there. Well, Carlos Rodon now. He was nasty in Raleigh. Well, he was filthy last night. And I tell you what now. If it wasn't for a... really, just quite frankly, a bad pitch in the ninth inning. He would have had a perfect game. He had to hit batsman, and other than that, there was nothing doing. White Sox take care of business, but congratulations to Carlos Rodon. He was a tremendous, I mean, big-time pitcher for NC State here in the ACC, but he was awesome last night for the White Sox.
Boy, sure was. And there's the ball that got away, the slider in the dirt, hit the foot.
Yeah,
and
it did.
And that's the only guy that got to base last night against Carlos Rodon.
Yep.
He's quite a story since being an awfully high draft pick, obviously. He's kind of had some injury issues. Nice to see him get a moment like that last night. And you know what? Anytime you can celebrate ACC baseball, we're going to do it here on this show for sure and on the network. But there may be a little more reason to celebrate than you might think. Sean Crest offered this tweet last night. This is the first no-hitter by a Triangle ACC school product since September 3rd, 1947.
Hmm.
Excuse me?
Yeah, how about that?
That was before the league.
That's right.
not the National and the American, the ACC.
Right. Exactly right.
Duke's Bill McCahan threw one for the Philadelphia A's. UNC has never had a Major League Baseball pitcher throw a no-hitter. So State and Duke have no-hitters among those Triangle ACC schools. Good tweet last night from Sean Crest. And congratulations to Carlos Rodon and to Elliot Avent. And, Pac, you remember, good heavens, how many years ago? 2000, I guess it was 13. The 18-inning ACC semifinal that night in Durham, Duke, Carolina. Phenomenal game that night.
Did you have that one, by the way? Was that the 19-hour game?
Did not.
No, you didn't have that one? That went in like 3 days. It took 3 days to finish that one?
There is a funny story about that. The game beforehand also went extra innings. And then Duke, Carolina, who had all these people, the ACC at that time, you emptied the stadium kind of between the games, so all these Duke and Carolina or State and Carolina people are outside the Durham Bulls Athletic Park waiting to get in, right? And when they got the ball game in front, ran extra innings, Clemson was involved. Then they cleared the stadium, and then they've had the largest crowd ever to see ACC baseball that night with Carolina State, and they played 18 innings. Phenomenal game. So. Yeah, just great for Carlos. And Carlos Rodon, by the way, started the game and was sensational that night at Durham Bulls Athletic Park.
Did I ever tell you the story about throwing out the first pitch with the infamous Charlotte Knights? Did I ever tell you that story? Huh?
No.
Now, remember, we had Docs Aiken on yesterday, right? We had Docs on yesterday, and he was excellent.
Yeah.
And we brought up the fact that he threw out the first pitch for the Philadelphia Phillies. And he thought, you know, he said it was a fastball a little high, right? Well, years ago, back when I was doing primetime with the Pac-Man, the local AAA affiliate here asked me if I'd like to throw out the first pitch. And it was that was Mark Packer bobblehead night, right? They were going to do one of those promotions with the station, all that stuff. I said, sure, whatever you want to do. I said, the problem is, time.
Mark Packer bobblehead night?
Yeah. In fact, I got one in here somewhere. It's up here on the upper deck on the other side. I'll get it to you during the break. Yeah, but yeah.
We'll need to bring that. We'll need to show that in the camera range before we're done today.
I can see it. It's way up here on the top shelf on the opposite side.
Okay.
Of the base, up here.
It's fine. All right.
I got it for you. But yeah, nevertheless.
Up there.
So you know, okay. You can't see it up there. It's behind the light and behind the Pittsburgh Cathedral and all that stuff.
I said, I hear you. I got you.
All right. Yeah, so long story made short. I said, I would love to do it. I think they were going to do it like on a Friday night. Great. Whatever you guys want to do. I'm cool. But it was a doubleheader. The game was a doubleheader. So they said, Pack, here's what I said. But here's my problem. I said, I'm on the air till 7 o'clock. So I can't make the first game to throw it out. No problem. You'll throw out the first pitch of the second game, the doubleheader. Piece of cake. No issue. Right. All right. So when they said, hey, you need any tickets for family and friends? I said, sure. Just give me whatever you want. I'll get a whole group of people out there. And so
whatever you want.
So the show ends. I hightail it out there. They're in like the second or third inning of the first game, the double. First game goes like 18 innings. It went till midnight, Wes. And I'm telling you, by the time the game ended, the first game ended.
Mark Packer bobblehead night.
Yeah, figures, right? I'm telling you, there couldn't have been 35 people in the stands by the time the second game was going to start. Oh, I wasn't about to leave. And the GM and all that stuff came down and said, Pack, if you want to go, you can go ahead. You don't have to. I said, are you crazy? I said, I wouldn't leave this ever. You talking about something to talk about on Monday's show. I said, this is going to be awesome. And they were like, yeah, but you know, we don't know when this game's going to end. I said, I don't care if it goes till 6 a.m. I'm here. I'm with you. And so sure enough, I can't remember how many innings the game went, but it had to be midnight, right? And I'm telling you, there weren't 35 people in the stands. And it was so late that the team that they were going to play next had already played in Durham, finished their game, bust down to Charlotte, and they were in the stands watching the second game. But I got out there, brother, and I threw a heater in front of about 35 people
at
past midnight. Oh, I can't even remember what time. It had to be, I don't know, 12:30? 1 o'clock? It took forever. Awesome. But, man, I wasn't about to leave.
Here to throw out the first pitch.
I was.
Throw out the first pitch for Saturday's game.
As it turned out, so that it was a classic.
Nice.
But that was the infamous bobblehead night. I mean, typical, right? Packing, you know, I can't make the first. No problem. We'll have you throw out the first pitch of game two. Yeah. Okay, cool. It was a West Durham special.
I don't know how the Lumberjacks feel about this, but I'm gonna give pause if somebody says we'd like Packer and Durham to throw out the first pitch.
I'm in too, but bad knee and all.
You know, now given your track record, the 7:05 start might in fact be 11:45.
Yeah, well,
be careful. Got to watch that.
Yeah, that curse will come along with you. But I tell you what, the next time I throw it, I'm going a little curve. I'm going to go a little knuckle curve.
Yeah. All right. Not the fastball high.
I've already done it. I've done that. Been there, done that. Yeah. Hummed it right in there. Piece of cake.
Couple of notes here in this opening segment before we go around the ACC and tell you about volleyball last night after the break. Another player declared yesterday for the NBA draft and signed with an agent. Duke's Matthew Hurt has elected to forego his last 2 years in Durham with Coach K. He has declared, of course, led the ACC in scoring, better than 18 a game. So he joins a list now of notables that features Jalen Johnson, of course, who declared early, Scotty Barnes of Florida State, Raekwon Gray of Florida State, Dayron Sharp, Trey Murphy III, and you see the overall ranks, according to ESPN.com, of these notable ACC players. It is of also news yesterday that Balsa Koprivica, Balsa Koprivica of Florida State, declared for the NBA draft. I don't know that he signed with an agent. Some of these statements, social media types, things like that, are a little foggy when it comes to what their status is, retained eligibility. Armando Bacot was pretty clear about it. Jose Alvarado yesterday also announced he was going to test the NBA draft, not sign with an agent, which goes along with Moses Wright and Michael DeVoe of Georgia Tech. So the window is open for those guys to come back if they so choose to use that extra year. All that being said, Pac, there's a lot of inventory leaving the ACC early. I'm not sure how many draft spots there are.
I have told you this. There's a number of things. I'm going to repeat myself for the 400th time. I'm assuming everyone is gone when it comes to the transfer portal. I'm assuming that everyone should declare for the NBA draft whether you can play dead in a cowboy movie or if you're an all-star. You should go ahead and declare. And you know what? Hey, if the NBA says they're not impressed with my 0.4 points per game, I go back to school X. Why wouldn't everyone just declare for the NBA draft? Seriously. Let the NBA say, dude, you can't play in our league. Or, hey, you know what? We think you can play. I would let everybody declare. Anybody that declares, hey, I'm available for the NBA draft. We're assuming all of you are going to declare. This is my approach now with all of this. And like I keep telling you, Wes, in October, when everybody in the ACC hands us the roster, then we'll take inventory and determine, you know what, that's a pretty good-looking club. Or, man, I don't know. I think they're going to struggle. I've reached a point with all of this stuff that, hey, I'm just assuming everybody's on the go. And when everybody decides to make an announcement, they're showing up to return to school, that is great news. But I will also point out as well, first time ever the ACC had zero, let me emphasize that word, zero first-team All-Americas, second-team All-Americas, third-team All-Americas.
Right.
And then you go through that list that you just rattled off and other names that you gave me another half dozen that weren't even on that list, I would ask the question. And I don't mean this to scare anybody, but we're sitting here on April the 15th. Where is all the talent? Where are all the players? I'm just asking. Mm-hmm. This is a league that produced zip in terms of first team, second team, third team All-Americas. And the names that you do recognize, a lot of them were on that list that we just rattled off. Where is the next wave of talent in this league? Is it a concern? Mm-hmm. I think it is. I know this is ACC Network, but I'm being transparent. I'm concerned for college basketball, big time, given this transfer portal.
We both are there. Yeah.
Big time. And I'm worried that college basketball is, until they get some leadership, is playing itself into a one-month sport. That is a problem. Yeah. That is a major, major problem. And I know there's pockets around the country that, you know, care about it 24/7, 365, which is great. You are in the vast, vast minority because we are going down a crazy path that somebody better get a handle on it pretty quickly because I am really concerned about it.
Well, let me add to that before we get to the break. Our friend Nicole Auerbach, who has been with us several times before, did the reporting on the bulk of this yesterday and has been following the story since the start. The NCAA is going to allow transfers to play football and basketball without sitting out a season. This is no surprise. The Division I Council voted yesterday to change the longstanding rule that has often deterred players in high-profile sports from switching schools. Yesterday, the council's decision, it becomes official today. The so-called one-time exception had been available in other sports over the years, but now it is expected to be the one-time transfer without sitting out. So there you go. All the people that have announced the transfer, who have gotten into the portal and announced destinations and things like that, either whether they have that extra year or whether they're underclassmen, guess what? There you go. You're free to go. And that just means more upheaval in the landscape, in my opinion, of college basketball in particular. But it also changes the game in football and some of these other sports where this has not been the case most recently for the last few years.
And Wes, here's the other thing. That has a trickle-down effect to the junior and senior in high school because now all of a sudden,
yes,
if you're a football coach, basketball coach, tennis coach, whatever, and you say, hey, listen, I get a chance to add a junior from school X who really fits exactly what I need on my roster, as opposed to that uprising junior or senior in high school that you say, well, they've got potential. I like that. But you know what? I can guarantee lock somebody with experience that's a little more mature, has played in the bright lights, and can play immediately, as opposed to rolling the dice and going, do I go heavy after that high school senior that I think a couple years from now can help me? It is a problem. Now, it's great for student athletes. Yep. They have more power and control than ever before. But I'm going to tell you something. Every coach in college athletics is going to earn every single dime of their salary, because this is going to be a burden. And talk about head on a swivel. It better rotate 360 is what it better do, because we are in a crazy, crazy time right now in college athletics.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. On a Thursday, tons of guests. And Wes didn't believe me, so let me just give you this bad boy right here.
No, I believed it existed. Huh? Right there, it is. Oh, my gosh.
Right here? See that right there? And I'm wearing my Southern Fried Football T-shirt. Right there, Southern Fried Football T-shirt.
Sure.
The smart people in Bristol said I look like a Lars Tiffany back in that era. That could be a Lars Tiffany Mark Packer lookalike. By the way, brought to you by New Balance. The good folks at Boston College will appreciate that with their new deal with New Balance this week.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, why don't you set that down? Put that over there by the hat and the Emmy, because we can.
Right,
yeah,
I'm going to put it right here so I can just kind of peek over the top. What are you talking about, Wes?
Yeah, great. What do you think you'd part with that for, Pack? People want that, I think.
People can find it on eBay, probably, be my guess. Hundreds of them.
Huh.
I'll accept a penny. You have it. 1 cent. It's probably what it's worth.
A lot of folks went to the ballpark that night and are willing to part with their memento. Okay, all 35 of them that were there at 1 in the morning to watch you sling heat. It first was pitch heat. Of game two.
It was Rodon-esque is what it was.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Yeah, it was a curve in the dirt. That was the only comparison.
No, it was a strike. It was a strike at about 48 miles an hour is what it was. It was a change-up.
All right.
Change-up.
Yeah. Let's jump to Omaha, shall we? Good day for the ACC, right?
No doubt.
Got off to a great start. Notre Dame won early. They beat Army 3-1. Georgia Tech got 31 kills from Julia Bregman and beat Lipscomb 3-1. And then our man, Coach Fisher, a little excited to get to Omaha. Kayla Lund, the 2-time player of the year. They took out the Blackbirds of Long Island University 3-0. So they join Louisville in today's second round, and action starts at noon. Notre Dame will get Oregon. Louisville hosts the Toreros of San Diego.
Right.
And then Georgia Tech meets Minnesota at 7, and Pitt plays Utah at 7. All of that, by the way, is available on the ESPN app. I watched a little bit of it last night there as well. So you can see the volleyball action from Omaha and the national tournament. Better day for baseball, too, Pack. Yesterday in the ACC, Miami got a walk-off from Anthony Villar. They beat Florida Gulf Coast 3-2. Said walk-off. And the Canes win. Bottom of the ninth inning. There you go. Throw the hand up. Round first. And Miami is a winner. 3-2, the final for Gino Damari's team. NC State beat A&T yesterday. North Carolina A&T 10-4. Wolfpack's now won 6 straight and has put up double-digit runs in 3 of their last 5. Elliott's got the bats hot in Raleigh, it looks like.
They need to be. One other thing, too. Virginia and ODU. Postponed yesterday with bad weather. ODU, by the way, top 25 team in Virginia. Like we keep saying, the Hoos, after a really slow start, are playing good baseball too. So it's unfortunate we couldn't get that game in. But yeah, it was a much better day. The night before was a mixed bag. And unfortunately, the marquee games, league didn't do great. Didn't do great. But again, midweek games, get you later. Weekend, we get the conference matchups. And really good storylines now. We keep talking about how good Louisville is. We knew that. But the storylines to me are teams like Virginia Tech and Pitt and Notre Dame. Kind of some unexpected participants in a baseball league that you expect some other folks to show up and do their thing. But those three in particular have been great, great storylines this year, not only within the league, but also from the national perspective.
Yeah, ACC Women's Golf Championship starts today at Sedgefield Country Club in Greensboro. The ladies will be working on the Donald Ross course. Five teams are ranked in the nation's top 25, Duke, Wake, Florida State, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. And, of course, Duke has won 21 of the 31 championships, and Wake Forest is the reigning champ. We'll keep an eye on that for you as play begins today in Greensboro at Sedgefield. So there you go.
If I was, if I lived a little bit closer and didn't have another job, I'd partake and check that out. Because I'm telling you what now, we keep telling about these spring sports and how good the league is. The league is unbelievable in terms of quality talent at the top. That tournament will be very, very entertaining. There's some big-time players in that deal now.
Yeah, agree with you on that. Well, you don't need an excuse to go to Lexington Barbecue. You can just take off and zip up and zip back.
Yeah, I could. But, you know, this afternoon gig, you know, from 4 to 7 kind of gets in the way sometimes of doing a lot of cool things in the afternoon. I just can't quite just say adios. It doesn't quite work that way.
I gotcha. Men's soccer awards are out, and Pittsburgh is featured. Panthers highlight the winning four of the five major awards. Jay Vidovich is the coach of the year, and previous guest on the Packer and Durham program, Valentin Noel, is the offensive player of the year. Mr. Packer.
Yeah, he is one of our favorites because we asked him to do a promo in his native language, and when he was getting ready to do it, he stopped and said, "Wait a minute, who are you guys again?" and he became endearing to us when he said it because we just had a good laugh out of it. But listen, this Pitt-Clemson thing coming up this weekend is going to be out of sight. You're talking about talent all over the joint. Winner gets the automatic bid into the NCAA tournament, but that's what you got coming up this weekend with Pitt and Clemson. Should be great.
By the way, Pitt getting four of the five ACC Men's Soccer Awards. Until this year, no Pitt player had ever won an ACC Men's Soccer honor on the year. Like, I mean, it just shows you what a remarkable job Coach Vidovich has done and the talent that University of Pittsburgh has. So, a lot to look forward to. Side note here, before we get to Dan Murphy, Florida State yesterday has unveiled plans for a new standalone practice facility for football. Now, they have an indoor, but it's kind of tucked in around the stadium and the Moore Athletic Center and places like that. This is a standalone building. Good heavens. I mean, the art here is crazy. But this is what Florida State is headed for. Back.
Sweet. Like it. David Coburn was on with us earlier this week. And, you know, and he started talking about, I thought it was a really important thing he said this week on the show. Mm-hmm. When he started talking about what does the fall look like? And he said, right now we're moving on as if that we can have, you know, full attendance, but it's so critical for not only Florida State, but everybody to get back to a normal. And, you know, you start seeing facilities being built like that. Guess what? They don't grow on trees. You got to write a check, a big one with multiple commas to get stuff done like that. So that is why that revenue stream is beyond critical. Coming after a 2020 football campaign, it's all sparse crowds at best. And you just need to get people back in doing things. Tailgating, commerce, economy-driven stuff, merchandise, ticket sales, all of that has to happen. So very cool, though, for Florida State. And everybody else that says, hey, listen, we're moving forward with plans. That's a very – to me, that's encouraging that, hey, all right, you know what? We know there's going to be some hurdles we all got to jump over, but we got to move forward here. So, again, awesome for Florida State.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Program, tons of guests coming your way. Again, we're here to inform and entertain. And a lot of information, though, is going to be coming your way in this next segment, Wes. Name, image, and likeness is the next big deal that folks better have. I mean, this transfer portal has grabbed everybody's attention, but name, image, and likeness is here. We've already talked about a couple schools taking advantage of it, but everybody will jump on board with this, and it's got huge implications.
Yeah, it does, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch the kind of evolution of this process. Dan Murphy has covered name, image, and likeness and some of the tentacles of it for ESPN and ESPN.com. He's kind enough to join us here this morning. Dan, we've heard a lot in the last couple of days. Florida State and North Carolina both announcing, if you will, branding agreements with firms. Now, Florida State appealing to what it looks like student athletes. Carolina, I'm guessing because the state hasn't quite put a law together, is talking exclusively about helping former athletes. Take us kind of through what we've talked about, and then we'll get into the bigger picture, I guess.
Yeah, I can promise information, not entertainment for you guys, I think, this morning. But thanks for having me on. I would say that those announcements are important. You know, the Florida State one's interesting as Florida gets ready to gear up for this July 1st. But there have been dozens of schools at this point that have signed up with third-party groups that are trying to steer schools through what's going to be coming here with name, image, and likeness. And a lot of schools right now are a little bit frustrated and fatigued in trying to figure out what the details of this are going to be. So we're going to see a lot of schools turning to outside help to try to understand how both to navigate this from a compliance standpoint and how they can get through it and what they're allowed to do, and then also using it as a recruiting chip, right? Trying to get players to understand we're going to do everything we can to help you maximize your brand and help create opportunities for you as much as the rules will allow.
Dan, what about the NCAA? I mean, at some point in time, they've got to have an answer, though, for everyone, regardless of what the state law is. And I know that, hey, like you said, Florida State's moving forward. They know what their state rule is, so they're going to act accordingly. But at some point in time, everybody's under the NCAA umbrella. So at what point in time do we understand that, hey, here is the announcement from the NCAA? Drum roll, please.
Yeah, it's a great question. Right now, the NCAA is committed to we are going to change our rules at some point in time. And I would think that that's going to happen before the start of next football season, just because they're not going to want to go into a season where a group of schools in a few states has different rules than everybody else has. They were supposed to vote on proposed details of how they were going to change their rules back in January. That got delayed for a number of reasons, but there are two big pieces I think the NCAA is waiting on. One is to see how much help, if any, they're going to get from Congress in the form of making a national law that will govern all this stuff. And the other is this big Supreme Court case that was heard just at the end of last month. They're waiting for probably late May, early June, maybe a little bit longer than that, for the Supreme Court to come back. And while that case doesn't directly relate to name, image, and likeness, it will have some impact on how much influence the NCAA can have on setting these rules. Because right now, the states that are set to go into effect this summer are already going to be allowing more than the NCAA is comfortable allowing, even when they redo their rules and put forth whatever proposal they're going to put forth.
So, Dan, what keeps us from chaos? Because I'm sensing that the calendar and the judicial process, if I can call it that, we're going to lead ourselves into about 8 lanes of traffic to try and drive down a 2-lane road if we're not careful.
Yeah, I don't know that chaos is avoidable at this point. Honestly, you're going to need a white knight riding in at the last minute with some solution. And they've had the NCAA, lawmakers, whoever you want to group into that large day, they've had a couple years to try to work through the specific details of how this is going to work.
Right.
And frankly, it's a new deal. No one really understands exactly how this is going to play out. There's all kind of projections of what kind of money is going to be thrown out there, what kind of deals are going to be able to be made, and people are going to get creative with this and find new ways to use it, and you know, both from the school's advantage of trying to recruit and players' advantage of trying to make money. There's no way to predict everything that's going to happen. So I think the smartest thing that I've seen from, you know, both people in the college sports world and in the politics world is this idea that, hey, let's roll the balls out. Let's try to do this for a year or two with making sure we leave flexibility to adjust on the run. And that's not something that the NCAA or Congress are particularly well known for doing, but being able to be flexible and form these rules as we start to see what this future marketplace for athletes is going to look like, there will be chaos for the next, 6 months, year, however long, I think how long that chaos lasts may be still be in the control of the NCAA and other people are going to be making these rules.
And Dan, obviously states are operating at a different pace as well. I mean, some states are kind of ahead of others in terms of already giving you the green light. We had David Coburn, the athletic director at Florida State this week, and said, hey, listen, here is the state law as we know it, and we're going to abide by it. So to be honest with you, I think it's kind of a smart business move if you are in one of those states to say, well, let's get ahead of the game before the rules are even dictated, as far as the NCAA is concerned.
Yeah, and look, this whole thing started, right? This was the whole plan. This thing started back in 2019 when California passed a state law saying the NCAA rules aren't going to be legal in our state starting in 2023. And the idea from the state senator who raised that was that this is a competitive market. And then if one state has these rules, every other athletic director and football coach is going to be banging on the door of his state legislator saying, hey, you need to change these laws for me too. And that's exactly the way this has played out. And the hope all along from even the people at the state level making these laws was that people would realize that the competition is going to drive this and it makes more sense to have one national rule. So far, no one's been able to agree on what that rule is. So as these state laws roll out, there are little differences between all of them that could cause some interesting issues. But yeah, Florida is scheduled to start July 1st. There's a few others that are on pace to start July 1st. And, a couple more that right now aren't scheduled to start for a year or two after that. We'll see if that holds or not. But there's probably one more off-ramp the NCAA can take to try to delay this a little bit longer than July. But right now, it looks like it's going to be starting to come into play piecemeal if the NCAA doesn't act in the next couple months.
Dan, I think the key, the follow-up here is you mentioned California in the year 2019. You knew then, everybody knew then that this was a real deal. Mm-hmm. And here we are in 21, 2 years after the fact, and we still have no idea what the NCAA is doing. And to me, that is the flag. That, hey, you knew this was coming. So all the delays, you can come up with all the dog ate my homework excuses you want. You knew this train was coming down the track. And instead of trying to figure out a way to delay stuff, how about a concept of going to get something done?
And if you were paying close attention, you knew before that, right?
That's right.
The noise was gathering behind the scenes, right? This has been headed in this direction for 10 years. You knew with a lot of certainty back in 2019 that this was coming. And the NCAA themselves, a month after that California law passed, said, yes, we need to change our rules. That's coming up on 18 months ago at this point that they decided to do. And we're still talking about the same details. Like these are complicated things to sort out to a certain degree, but the arguments haven't changed much. The details that have to be figured out haven't changed much. And that's why I think it seems like the new approach is like, hey, let's just give this a shot. And it might not be perfect right away, but we got to do something and roll it out and we'll adjust as we need to on the fly.
Dan, for all the work you've done on this project, I want to ask a couple questions. One, how do these firms make their money with the school? Are they signing a marketing contract, much like a multimedia deal that the school typically at Power 5 and ACC level already has in place? And number two, are we going to get to a point where a coach is going to go on a recruiting visit or they're going to bring a student athlete potentially to campus on an official and they're going to show them everything academically, show them the locker room, show them the uniforms, and then hand them a name, image, and likeness rate card to let them know how much they think they can generate for themselves if they come to school X as opposed to school Y?
If the coaches aren't already handing those out to recruits right now, they're behind. That's right. Happening now. Like that's been a pitch for the past year or so. This is what's eventually going to come. We don't know the details of it yet, but we can help you build your brand. So when that day comes, when they turn the faucet on, our athletes are going to be ready to take advantage of it. Now, one of the details that's left to figure out is how involved can a school be in helping an athlete out in creating those deals? And that'll be an interesting piece. Right now, the NCAA doesn't want the school to be sort of a partner with athletes in setting them up with deals. They don't, because that gets a little too close to the school facilitating putting money in their pockets, which is a bridge that they're not willing to cross. To answer your first question, though, these firms, they're all have a slightly different business plan and even some different services that they offer. Some of them are more of a consulting fee from the schools telling them, hey, we're going to walk you through what's allowed and what's not allowed and help get you set up and organized for how to track all of this stuff. So some of them will get money directly from schools as you would pay a regular consultant for any other number of reasons that athletic departments use those type of services. Others pitch themselves more as a direct connection between for athletes and future brands, you know, a company that may want to pay an athlete for an advertiser. And so they'll have these sort of online portals where an athlete will be able to log into something and, you know, on an app on their phone, and see, hey, Coke wants to offer you to $100 to put up an Instagram ad, or Gatorade wants to offer you this to tweet out a certain thing about how you're drinking Gatorade this week at practice. And the companies will then get a little cut of the money from the brand that sets those ads up for them. So there's all kinds of different interests. There's a whole, you know, cottage industry that's popped up around this, and some of it has already been established from social media influencers and other people like that along the way. But there will be plenty of business opportunities, and there are, you know, dozens of companies right now that see this as a ripe opportunity for a way to build a business.
How much money,
all right,
can a student athlete,
go ahead, Pat,
expect to make? I mean, you see all kinds of crazy crystal balls on this, or, you know, and I think one of the things that scares fans is, oh my God, the quarterback for the opposing rival team is going to be making $1 million. I have no earthly idea. So how do you ballpark what you think a student athlete at the highest profile position could make? What would you guess, Dan?
This is it's been one of the most, I think, debated parts of this. And I spent months talking to people trying to figure that out. And the shortest answer I can give you is it's up to the imagination of the athlete, right? There are probably 10, a dozen athletes across all sports in college every year that might have an opportunity to make high six figures, $1 million, just by sort of showing up and being themselves and signing the deal with McDonald's and Coke and Gatorade and that kind of thing. So, you know, that's your Trevor Lawrence, your Zion Williamson, those kind of athletes. Very, very few and far between. There's another tier of athlete, right? Maybe you're the guy who's a starter on a local team, right, who might be able to sign some regional deals or get a deal with the local car dealership to appear in their commercials and that kind of thing. But most of this stuff for most athletes will be small grassroots kind of thing, right? The offensive line wants to go, you know, always eat to the same pizza shop on Thursdays after practice. So the pizza shop says, hey, can I hang up a sign that says you guys eat here, and then I'll give you free food when you come here to eat. These kind of like bartering exchanges more is what I've been told from a lot of people. So it's, you know, every athlete on campus is going to be walking around a millionaire all of a sudden. That kind of money doesn't exist. The type of donors who donate to schools aren't all of a sudden going to stop paying all of that money to schools. Some of it might start going to athletes if they run businesses, but a lot of those folks who are you know, donating the fancy locker rooms or the big new stadium upgrades aren't going to stop doing that for a couple of reasons. One, it's a huge tax write-off, which is a big part of the reason they do it. And two, they see it as a better investment to invest in the school than to take a flyer on an 18-year-old who may or may not pan out. So, again, that's a long answer to a tricky question where there really is no answer, right? This is a market that doesn't exist yet, and you're about to introduce maybe 500,000 new people to the advertising endorsement market, and it's not quite clear exactly how that's going to play out yet.
All right, Dan, I want to wrap on this. We talk about the earning potential between sports. I'm going to guess it runs the spectrum, right? Men to women, football to, I mean, college golf. We were talking about the ACC Women's Golf Championship starts later today. I mean, I've got to believe that the financials run the spectrum too. But it still sounds like that you've got this hurdle, if I can call it that, this unknown, which the NCAA has been very good at being unknown for a long time here. It's still sitting out there to kind of keep this thing at bay. But they're looking at a deadline of July 1 in the state of Florida, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's coming, right? And everybody realizes that and acknowledges that one way or another, this is going to happen. The one, I guess, move the NCAA still has is they could sue the states that their laws are about to go into effect in July and try to get a judge to hit pause on these laws and decide whether or not they're constitutional for a state to have a law that interferes with a interstate business. Get a little into the weeds and the legal stuff there. But yeah, this is coming July 1st, and I think you know, in terms of the spectrum of what kind of money is be able to made, you know, the one thing we didn't mention there is a lot of this has been motivated and changed based on social media. And, you know, sometimes people can build a social media following that is directly related to their talent or their, you know, fame as an athlete, right? There are a lot of different reasons that gets paid up. So that's part of the reason why it's so hard to decide exactly who will make what and how, because as much as these athletes are famous for their athletic ability, these are also college kids that have a lot of other skills that might not completely overlap with, you know, there might be a gymnast who, has a great social media following, or, you know, there's a, you know, famous case of a football kicker who was not a prominent kicker, but had a great YouTube page that was really entertaining and left to make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars based on that. So it's really hard to pin down the exact number of it. And again, that's part of the reason why this has been so hard for people in college sports to try to wrap their head around and do anything about it. But as you said, one way or another, it's coming for them. So if they want to have any say in control and regulating it, the clock is ticking on their opportunity to do that.
Man. Hey, Pack, he used the word portal too, which I knew was exciting when we were talking about some of these companies having an app and a portal you could go to, because I know what a big fan you are of portals now.
Well, listen, it's the real world, though. You know, we could sit here and analyze it and break it down left and right, but that is reality. And Dan, your point about the NCAA possibly trying to get more lawyers to spend more money to delay things is really probably what they'd like to do, because they're excellent at that. Let's not try to solve the problem.
Yeah.
Let's just delay it so it can still linger and cause issues by the time somebody else figures the next loophole that causes a headache.
Yeah.
I mean, so far they've spent more money on lobbying and lawyers in the past couple of years around this issue than they've spent in a long time on either of those things when you look through the financials. And, you know, I think they realize that it is a threat to their business model. They see it as you know, both a threat in terms of some of the money going – from player to players instead of schools. And also, I think the big fear for the NCAA has always been that this is another step down the slippery slope to athletes being paid directly. And that is the hill the NCAA has always been willing to die on. They don't want to cross that road. And they don't know exactly when they allow more and more incrementally for athletes, which they've been doing for the past decade. They don't know when it's going to get to the point where the courts decide, hey, this is a job. You are employing them. This is real compensation. So we can no longer place any limits on what these guys are allowed to make at all. I think there is some fear that this might be that breaking point for the NCAA, and it's why they've been so hesitant to try to figure out the details here.
Yep, good stuff, man. Keep up the good work.
Dan, you have done great work on this. We thank you for the time this morning, and we may bend your ear again at some point this summer, especially around July 1 when it looks like we're getting to if you pardon the pun, Independence Day here. So thanks very much.
Yes, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Dan Murphy's excellent. His work is great. And if you're into this name, image, and likeness, there's no better read as far as I'm concerned. The guy really knows his stuff. And it's cool having him on. Just kind of give you a little breakdown of what's coming down. Again, you're going to have to deal. As a fan, you better deal with this, because this is where we're going. And I've been harping on this for a long time on the radio, and it's about to change. We're going through an amazing transition right now in college athletics, and how you grew up with it, no matter how old you are, 70s, 80s, 90s, this century, it's getting ready to change to a new era of college sports. And that's where we are, Wes.
All right. So of the things he talked about, let me just offer you a couple things here. One, the variances are still one of the biggest unknowns in the whole deal. And when I say variances, state to state, sport to sport, installation, execution, compliance, all those things. Those variances are nowhere near smoothed out. That's the immediate part as it relates to the student athletes and the campuses, right?
Yep.
Here's the second part. You and I have talked about the organization a lot in the 2 years we've done television and the year and change we did radio ahead of this, right? You tell me how, in your mind, the NCAA survives this. Pack.
I don't know if they do.
I don't either.
I don't know if they do. I've always thought, again, years and years and years ago, that we would reach a point that there would be 40 to 50 schools that play, quote unquote, big time athletics, football, basketball, and then the assortment of other sports that can be justified. And then everything else is going to be a club sport. I've always thought that that's where we're going to eventually get to. And people thought it was crazy. PAC's nuts. I still believe that. And I think at some point in time, the big boys are going to take their ball and say, listen, we're going to create rules that are the kind of govern the way we all operate. That group, whatever that group is of 40 to 50 schools. And then everybody else, hey, unfortunately, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar business. And for anybody that thinks it's all about the amateurism, hey, that's all sounds great, but this is a multi-billion dollar industry. And at the end of the day, you hope you get a quality education. You know, Dan mentioned there's 500,000 opportunities. What he meant by that is there's 500,000 student athletes. And I got news for you. The backup rower on the crew team isn't going to get the name, image, and likeness dollars as the starting quarterback at the big-time school A, B, or C. It's called capitalism. It's reality. There is a supply and demand. We go back to Econ 101. That's what we've got going on here. So, you know, the NCAA, right. I do think, is trying to do the Heisman pose and stiff arm reality and say, let's just, hey, whoa, let's slow down. Hey, this train's coming, man. You're either going to be a part of it, you're going to be a solution, you're going to be a problem. And they better figure that out ASAP.
Yeah. I think that he mentioned we've had two athletes that could be high six, seven figures. Trevor Lawrence, Zion Williamson. Well, sure, we figured that part out, and we're not, you know, heavily into the business acumen. But I think the variances, again, I'll go back to the variance and all the different little things that are tied to this. And just what I know from working on campuses and being a part of college athletics, NCAA is not ready for this. They don't have the manpower for it. They don't have the processing for it, Mark. And again, we're still talking about an organization that dominates the landscape for 3 weeks a year, and that's it. All their money is made in 3 weeks. Fair?
No question.
All of a sudden, they're trying to change the other 49 weeks of the year? No, they have to pivot. It's not you pivoting to them, which is what happens in those 3 weeks. Now, they have to pivot back to the membership. The world-famous membership, the membership's now calling the shots on the organization. That's what I read in all of this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.